Welcome everybody to another episode of Kev's Perspective. I'm your host Kev Lowe, and today we had Andrew Thomas on. Okay, for those who don't know, Andrew Thomas is a producer from Minnesota, an artist as well. Recent in the past years, he's become a pop artist solo. He's also owns his own little label called Panasonic Records. Okay, and really cool guy. We got a chance to talk about his side hustle in real estate and how COVID is affecting that. We've talked about how COVID kind of affected his kids' learning and how he feels like he's becoming a teacher at home. Kind of talked about the local scene, and we covered a lot of cool topics. I think it was a very real conversation, and I've never met the guy, so it was really cool to connect with him since we've been in passing over the years. We've heard of each other but never once met. So really cool conversation, really cool person. Please welcome Andrew Thomas. Cheers. Andrew Thomas.
What up?
What's good, boy? How you been?
Man, I've been good, trying to stay busy, trying to stay out of trouble. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Trying to stay safe. Right now, we're a hotspot.
Oh, with the COVID?
Yeah. Are you in Minnesota still?
Yeah. I'm right here in Prior Lake.
Prior Lake? Oh, dude, you know what's... Okay, that's funny as fuck. I'm from Prior Lake. I'm from Prior Lake Savage.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So are you like... So how close are you to Mystic? That's usually the good identifier to how close you are in Prior Lake.
I'd say pretty close.
Pretty close?
Yeah.
So you're like, you're okay, right by the res, spitting distance?
I'm on the res.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. All right, cool. Well, everybody, this is Andrew Thomas. And just for those who don't know Andrew Thomas, he's, I'm going to say, I don't like calling you a local artist because I'll talk about a little bit why, but he is from Minnesota. He's an artist and recording artist around here and producer. He is, again, I've never met Andrew Thomas. Most of my guests I've met or I know of before, since I've been in the scene for 8-9 years, but this is the first time I've actually like had a local artist on here that's not, you know, I've never met. So good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Well, you know, I don't leave the cave often, and you know, I think, and I did a little, I looked into you a little bit, and I kind of think there's a similarity where we kind of both have been behind the scenes a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, started out as a producer when I was starting out. So like, you know, my face wasn't on the projects. So, you know, behind the scenes, you know, being at the shows, it's very even possible we cross paths and don't even know.
Well, we probably did, because there's a lot of mutual acquaintances that we know that I've realized that you've done songs with. And it's just funny because I was like, my first point here was who are you, man? Because like, first off, like you said, you don't leave the cave. Anyone who was in front in the Minnesota local scene, including Mod, who has investors on the res, right? Like, I've been on the res a ton, and I'm surprised I haven't even like crossed paths with you. So give me a quick synopsis. Who is Andrew Thomas?
That's a great question, and I ask myself that often. But basically, I'm just kind of like I'm just a person. But you know, as far as musically, I started off as a producer, starting young. You know, my first, you know, artist you might know, Minnesota Fats. So I did most of his production, you know, throughout the years, from Perfect Candidate on.
Okay.
And me and him were partners, and we did all those songs with, like, you know, about, like, you know, we did Lay You on the Bed. That was actually the first time I ever sang.
Really?
Yeah. That was Lay You on the Bed. We had Snoop on that one. And then we did the Can I Freak. We had Waka on that one. You know, and I was just producing the records behind the scenes in that era. So we did that a long time. And me and Fats were like, you know, really close working together. So after that, you know, I kind of started wanting to be an artist myself. So I got into like singing and songwriting, because I was always writing songs, because I originally started off playing piano when I was real young. I'm kind of jumping all over the place. So I guess I started off like playing piano a lot when I was a young kid. So I just, you know, murdered the piano, made beats. That's how I got into production in the first place. So then I started fucking with, like, you know, working with Fats and getting all those records out. And so after that, then I wanted to do like my own artist thing a little bit. So then, you know, I dropped a couple records myself. And then I ended up, you know, working with a lot of other local people after that. Cause, Jay Plaza hit me up.
Yep.
Me and him have been working together for a while now, you know, even that was before the free Wi-Fi days.
Yep.
But I also, you know, mixed their album that,
did you?
Wi-Fi album. Yeah. I mixed that. I think the majority of it. I think there's songs on there that I didn't mix.
Right. You just, I mean, with every like project that's underneath some good funding and stuff like that, I'll say like that has like some legitimate to it. In the behind, there's a lot of producers, there's a lot of engineers. I mean, depending, you know, it really depends. But I didn't know you did that. I know you work with Plaza though. Yeah. That's kind of like, and then you work with De Niro as well. So you've worked with two out of the three.
Well, I knew Plaza, and then I also knew Rift through different, you know, I met Plaza on, you know, me and him met directly, but I met Rift through a mutual friend. So I actually knew Rift and Plaza before Free Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And Free Wi-Fi popped off, and then De Niro was in that group as well. And that's how I got to know De Niro, was through Free Wi-Fi.
Okay. Right?
So that, you know, did its thing, and, you know, we worked on that project. It was pretty fire. And then I ended up, you know, hit, you know, me and De Niro are cool. So I had the song Sugar Baby. This is more recent. And I was like, bro, this is perfect for you, because he had the dad record. Mm-hmm. And he was always like, I'm dad, you know. And he had, I think he had like an art at some point that said Sugar Daddy or something on it. It had like the candy on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it ever came out. So I was just like, bro, this is fucking perfect. So he came, he fucking murdered it, you know. And then I sat on that record for like a year, year and a half.
Okay.
Because I didn't know how to drop it, because I'm not typically like a hip hop artist. I've always been kind of going like the pop lane. But like, I got so much positive feedback on that record when I played for people. And it'd be like, you know, especially girls. They were like, that's my favorite song.
Really?
I'm like, yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, because it's silly or something. So then I just decided to fucking pull the trigger and run with it. And then we did that silly video where I dressed up as the old man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that video has like 750,000 views or something like that. Like, in comparison to your other videos, that seems to be the one that was like a fan favorite or the most popular, I'd say, that you've done. Because, man, I saw your videos, by the way, years ago. I remember when I was first starting. Yeah, well, I started as Kevlo a long time ago. And like, I was like, I need to know everybody in the scene. I wanted to learn. But that's like, I've always had this business mindset, hence why I'm a promoter now.
And I want to ask about that in a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And when, man, like, your visuals, that's a topic I'm gonna jump into right away. They're fucking mind blowing. I think everybody, any person I've ever shown your visuals to, because I'm like, I knew of you because your visuals were fucking nuts. And I'm like, dude, are you directing this, or do you just like have this crazy vision?
I got a team, and, you know, we've been working together. Like, they, when I first started, I shot my very first music video by myself. I don't know if you've seen it. It was in me in the garage, and I'm like playing the guitar or whatever. I shot that all by myself, but shooting videos by yourself fucking sucks. Because, you know, you got to do 10 jobs. But yeah, I'm a very DIY kind of guy, so I do most things myself. But no, I went on and I tried to find somebody who was fire. You know, and I didn't feel like there was like a ton of like, you know, no shade. I just didn't see a lot of fire. So I was like trying to find somebody. So I found somebody who had like a reel. I was going through like actual, like, you know, film people. And these guys shot like short films and shit like that. So I hit them up. And, you know, it's a team of Alec and Alex. They have something called Coban Productions, and they're fucking fire. But, you know, we were shooting on like Red Dragons. We would have like a staff, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were shooting on like good shit. And like, you know, in my videos, you know, it's not cheap. It's, but, you know, I feel like the video is what brings people in. I feel like if I didn't make the videos, I don't think people would know who I am. So I think it was really important to me that I not look fucking crazy out here. I don't want to be like putting out shit and I just look like busted, or, you know, you see a lot of stuff where it's just like handheld camera stuff, you know, and they walk around.
You, especially with like, I'll be honest, you walked in this scene with like a repertoire, right? It's different when you're an artist, right? And you're just starting out and you're like, okay, like, I'm going to dabble with these people, and you put everything out that you can. But you're like, no, I work with Fats, and you saw success from that. You work with Snoop. Like, if, and being a producer is a little different, right? You're behind the scenes, but you started with a good amount of like, I'm going to call like a book of business behind you. So you're like, I want to come out strong. Right. And I think everything you've released since then has been strong on the visual game. And I think that's what you said by cinematic. I know what you mean by like film reels, because if you're a real videographer, every year you come out with a reel. So for those who don't know, I know we're speaking on like 50 different things. For those who don't know, when you're like a videographer, or you call yourself a cinematographer, you come out with reels every year of your work, and you put it like in a more, not all of it has to be cinematic, because you can be creative, but you know what I mean? It's a good quality piece of work every year. My buddy Gage Reagan, of Gay Draken Productions has shown me that as well. He's like been my best friend for years, and he's taken filmmaking so seriously. But he's like, he had the same mindset, right? He wanted to be behind the scenes, and he didn't want to be in front. He didn't care about marketing, essentially. And I've been like, bro, I have a marketing major. It kills me that you're not at all marketing, right? Like, it kills me. That's how your business works, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, but again, back on the talented of, there are people in the scene that are, you know, they do that quick back and forth. They buy one Ronin and they, you know, buy a Sony A7 and say,
you gotta start. I mean, that's not a bad thing. Like, you learn by doing. Like, I learned by doing. Like, I'm a high school dropout. I didn't, you know, go to college for nothing. But, you know, I was just, you know, I'm just adamant about what I do. And I'm very, you know, meticulous. But I'm also like, you know, I grew up musical. Like I'm saying, like I was playing, like I played piano just on my own, like self-taught by ear type shit since I was like 8, 9 years old. And I just like ran it until now. And I'm 34 now. So you just learn by doing. And I think, but like the real, the importance of the real, not to jump around, is that like it gives, you know, the potential client something to see. So I'd be like, now I want to hire this person, you know. But if you're just like in the local music scene, you know, you're just like, okay, let me shoot this video for this person, shoot this video for this person. You just boom, 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 boom. But you know, and then you could make a reel out of that, and then, you know, just step your game up every year. But like, I just really wanted to make sure, like you said, you know, I've been in the game a long time, but mainly behind the scenes. So I wanted to make sure that I like came out strong.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, that's a good segue on what I want to talk about next is, do you pay attention to the local scene given that you've seen the real music industry? And I talk, if you don't know, but I've talked about this a lot.
Parts of the real industry.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like, it's hard to see the entire scene, you know? Like, I've personally never been signed to a label, but I've worked with people who have been, you know? I've dealt with certain record labels. I've dealt with certain situations, but that doesn't mean that I have like a full-blown knowledge of how the entire scene works.
Right.
You know, we've done like national tours and stuff. So, I mean, I've seen a little bit, but do I pay attention to the local scene? Not as much as I should. I have.
How do you think you should? I'm going to interrupt. Why do you think you should?
Well, it's good to know kind of what's going on. It's kind of good to know who's popping, especially, you know, being a producer and like, you know, if, you know, someone's like kind of like killing it, it's kind of good to, you know, if you run into a situation where you can work together, it's good to know who you're dealing with. But I don't know. I don't as much as I should. I don't pay attention to, I'm very tunnel vision. I'm very focused on what like my little bubble is. So like my artists and like my music and stuff is like mainly what I focus on. I also run into the fear that I don't want to like copy anybody. That's like my fear as well. So I feel like if you study other people's music, it subconsciously leaks into your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, not even on purpose.
Yeah, like an unconscious bias. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Kinda, yeah, it just leaks in. And then it's just like, I don't want to sound like a shitty version of someone else. I want to sound like, you know, the best version of myself.
Yeah.
So I'm chasing that dragon. I do pay attention a little bit to the local scene. You know, I've gotten better. Networking has always been kind of tricky for me since I'm so introverted. But, you know, through the years now, since like I've done everything I've done, like I've been lucky enough that people are starting to kind of like know who I am. And I'm just like, that kind of opens a lot of doors for me. But I mean, I probably could have opened those doors sooner if I was like more outgoing and like, but I never went to like shows or nothing.
Yeah. I was going to ask, I've been like big in the show game. So that's where I've been.
Yeah.
I'd be like deep in the shadows. And that's how I met like my first, I always say this, but like the first two artists that I met were DJ Sidereel and Call Me Charisma. Those are the two people that I met way back when, and we were like performing at the garage, I think, together. Yeah. And then that's kind of like where we started. And then from there, like I knew those people and like, I guess there are advantages. The reason why I ask, like, why is it a big deal to pay attention to the local scene? Cause now in my role, I'll be honest, at the concert promoter, what's the point, man? Like my big fish is the people who are like trending in the real industry with already money and agency behind them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, so you're talking about like as a record show promoter, that it's more important for you to pay attention to like kind of national acts that you know can put feet in the door.
Yeah. Right? Like I can bring to this state to bring attention to it. Like the more, you know, national acts we bring here and the more local people we can put on those shows, it benefits the scene. But, you know, that's if those artists take advantage of those opportunities, right? And like for me, Like when we look at national acts, it's like we did a show with DaBaby in 2019 when he was Suge just released. So that really benefited our business and it benefited the artists on the bill, right? So like that's why for me, like I pay attention to the local scene, but mostly it's like, do you have good business? Okay, good. And you want this opportunity? Good. Okay, let's go. Like it doesn't really matter who you are.
Right. But the other side of that, it's good to be on the not the cutting room floor, but you know, you want to like know about it first. Like if you establish a relationship with like a hot artist here and you help them on their way, you know, that's, I think, of benefit to everybody as well. But you know, in order to do that, you have to know who's actually moving.
What's interesting, Andrew, is I've done that. And then it's like, it can bite you in the ass.
It can.
That's happened to me multiple times. Like mm-hmm. these people I just talked about, I don't work with anymore. Right. So it's like, and I don't know why. So it's one of those things where it's like, you got to be careful about who you do work with too.
Yes. Yes. One thing I always say is like, you shouldn't always put people in a position in which like they only have so much say over, like, let's say your quality of whatever, you know, it's just like, you run into situations. Well, I deal with like agents sometimes or managers. And it's sometimes they get all weird. You know, and it's just like a lot of times artists put these managers in such a high position where they can totally fuck them over. Like they'll own their whole brand. They'll have all their passwords. They'll have all their shit. Yep. So then when like that relationship, you know, inevitably falls apart, then there's usually animosity and then like some fuck shit usually goes down and it just happens over and over again. I understand both sides of view because it's like, you know, not a whole lot of artists can bring locally can bring a lot of feet in the door. But, you know, if you do know who is kind of popping, you know, and this is like what my label is kind of, you know, like I have a couple artists and they're all, you know, have like fan bases and stuff. And like, you know, I'm thinking you put them all on one ticket, you know, you'll sell out, you know, not like probably the biggest venue, but like a small venue can sell out and you could run, you know, a small circuit and just grow it organically that way. Because the big show sometimes though, because I, you know, we've done big shows where you open up for like a big artist and stuff and people don't give a fuck about, you know, the openers. They're just like, they're getting their drinks. They're like, shut the fuck up. Yeah. If like the promoter's been like really greedy and they put like fucking 40 billion openers on there.
That we don't agree with. I mean, that's one thing is I'll say right off the bat.
It's got to be a couple, right?
Yeah. Well, we say maximum three.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I think that's a good number because you don't want to wear out the audience, you know, cause they're like, I came here to see fucking DaBaby. Who the fuck are all these local dudes? And mm-hmm. a lot of times the local dudes aren't that good. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, ugh.
Yeah, so, and like it depends too. Like for me, like when you're sifting, because my first job in this company was to just find the local acts. That was my only job. So like I would sift through and qualify these people, but then like, you know, it depends because I could qualify them all day, bro. But then it's like, well, I don't know what their track record is for business. And then what if they do bad business? Well, I just put a good artist on there that didn't pay anybody money. So you know what I mean? Right. It's like there's two sides of the coin, right? Because people, when they think promoters, they think, like you said, greedy. They think sales. They think bad. They think the only thing the promoter's benefiting from is your pockets, which isn't true, man. Like, you know what I mean? That isn't 100% true, at least. I've seen both sides. I've seen someone throw 10 acts on in the beginning. I'm like, what the fuck am I watching, right?
Right, yeah. And it's just, and a lot of those local artists don't have a lot of like fans and stuff, so they're not even really benefiting the promoter. But a lot of the time, the promoter's just taking the money up front, like doing pre-sale and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they're just like, well, you know, just pay me and fucking get on the show. And then they do that to 10 artists. And so right. It's like, and they paid the writer for whatever act they're bringing in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a way of securing, you know, because like I've done promoting back in the day. And, you know, it can be, it's risky because you don't know how many fucking people are actually going to show up until the day of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, yeah. You're just like, okay, well, it's a big enough artist. I'm assuming they have this big enough draw, right? And then you're just like, okay, well, then, you know, then you're like, oh, fuck, 10,000 or whatever money up front. And it's like, okay, well, then I got to sell this many tickets at this price. And, you know, the venue is going to take this much, da, 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 da. You know, so like, I understand, like, why promoters do that kind of stuff. It's a symbiotic relationship between artists and promoters, I believe. I don't think there's, like, you know, a good guy or a bad guy. Like, we need each other. You know, as long as we like do good business by each other, I think it's a perfect relationship.
Yeah, as long as you both, it's a good business on both ends, like you said. But again, like it has to be a lot of, the only thing is to make it successful is communication, in my opinion. That's all you need, man. That's if you communicate with a promoter. I mean, because again, I've been an artist. I used to think promoters were bad. Like I did. That was the only thing I thought when I was an artist. And that to me was blatant ignorance because I didn't know. I mean, I've seen bad promoters, but I've seen phenomenal promoters. And I believe like the company I'm working with now, I was never meant to be a promoter, bro. Like that was not my goal. My goal was just to work in the music industry wherever I saw fit. So where marketing and sales comes into play is perfect for promoting, right? That's all you do. You just marketing and sales. That's all you fucking do. So, but to kind of segue off of that, I wanted to ask you as well, when was the last time you even performed, man? Because that's what I was saying was like, I was always at shows. So I never saw you once, but I've seen my boy Reed.
A whole lot late until later. I was kind of always just making records and putting them out and making videos and putting them out. I didn't do a lot of performing. I did perform a fair amount like the last 2 years, 1 year. I don't know. Like right before Sugar Baby came out. But I performed, I think the last show I performed was just like a little show in, I think it was like last November. Could have been early in the year. It might have been like February. It was, you know, but once COVID hit, and I kind of want to ask about that, what it's like being a promoter during the COVID economy. That's one question I want to ask you. But I didn't perform a whole lot. But when I did, I'd always kind of go all out. I brought my own sound gear in. Cause it's like certain songs, like in Sugar Baby, there's like the auto tune in it.
Yep.
So I wanted to make sure that like that translated through. So I have like a rack mount that I would wheel in and I would program everything. So then like I ran everything through like a session through like a DAW, you know, and I have all my songs played out, like song one, song two, song
yep.
three. And I would automate things on and off. So I would use automation to turn auto tune on for like a song and then pick the key of the song. Right. So stuff like that. And you know, I played a fair amount. Typically, I would do shows with like Plaza and stuff. Like we did that one at like First Avenue, 7th Street. That was my favorite. That was a lot of fun. But you know, just doing like little shows. I didn't perform like a whole ton. And when I performed earlier, I would be like a DJ for like other people.
Right.
So I was DJ for like Fats or Liz or, you know, other artists that I, you know, work with.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah, that's why I was just curious. Cause when you mentioned, by the way, to not breeze over that, when you mentioned your live performance, that's what the next question was, what do you do differently? And all of that, incorporating pedals and automation and not just doing, I mean, some artists don't even like make a performance take. They don't even do that. Most artists right. I see just rap over their songs. And that's just like, I always tell them because they ask me, right? They're like, what can I do differently? And I was like, man, even when I was an artist, the basic thing you got to do is make a performance track. And then once you do that, learn how to be not screaming into the microphone, learn levels. If you have autotune, make sure you're not just like singing your raw voice. I've made that mistake. I've sang with autotune in a track and then try to sing over that. And it just sounds awful. So the simple fact that you actually know music is a big deal to me as well. Cause I said this on the Wiseman Show once on another podcast in Minnesota. I said that I believe in artists. I don't believe in rappers. I believe in artists. I believe in people who know music because I was a classically trained musician, right? That's where I started. So I call you an artist if you can, if you know, you know, basic piano keys, if you know anything, you know how to read music, you know how to play an instrument. And like most, more often than not, it's not hard to say, pick up a drum set because that's what I did. You know what I mean? So it's like at the very least, can you just learn music? Like that's where if you're just a rapper, I mean, great things have come out of that, right? Like great, like Eminem, he wasn't a classical artist, right? He came out, but
Eminem produce a lot of his own music?
Yeah, he did for a while. In the very beginning, he did. He actually learned that step in the process. And that's one thing is so Pandasonic Records, I want to quickly ask about that. Because I couldn't find the label really anywhere. So I couldn't really figure out who's underneath that tier.
Well, you know, it's kind of just like a thing. It's something I set up. You know, it's good to have an LLC when you're moving money around. You know, so it's mainly for like, you know, just like legal tax kind of stuff. You know, I don't push the label as like a brand that hard. But you know, it's something I started up after when I was doing my own music for a while, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna need an actual label because I used to partner up with Bats and like Weon and stuff, and. But then when I was doing my own music, I was like, fuck, I need a label. So then I just started like an LLC, Pandasonic, right? So then I just kind of ran that. It's kind of like on the low. It wasn't like super crazy. I'm not like pushing it like Mill City or any like collective and stuff where
this right.
umbrella where I put everyone under. It's just kind of like mainly for like accounting purposes. But then I did end up partnering up with Jay Plaza with that. So now Plaza's a part of Pandasonic, and you'll see him post about it here and there. But it's not, that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is just getting out there. You know, it's like pushing the label. It's like, who gives a fuck about the label? Right. It's literally just a means to an end.
Right. That makes sense. And I was just curious. Cause when you,
I don't even think I have a website for it.
No, you don't. I've looked.
Yeah. I don't believe I have a website. I have a website for me as like an artist.
But even your website's basic. I didn't find a bio on your website. I was like, who is Andrew Thomas?
No, like, I'm bad at that shit.
Bro, all you got to do is put one discography. Some people read it like myself. You know what I mean? I'm like, I need to know who this man is before I interview him. But I mainly asked you to be on the podcast because I was like, your name gets thrown around. But it's like, all right, bro, that's it. Like, if I hear your name over the course of 7 years, I need to know who the fuck this guy is. You know what I mean? I didn't know you work with Fats. Like, I mean, like, is that, do you think that's where...
That's like my big brother. Like, me and Fats still talk. Yeah. That's like my guy.
So out of curiosity, people who are associated with Fats are normally like 300 Entertainment. So I'm curious, like,
Ryan, right? You're talking about Ryan?
Ryan and like, yeah,
I used to intern for Ryan back in the day.
Okay. I'm making connections.
I used to intern for Ryan way back in the day. Like, it has to be like 10 years ago. I actually moved to New York for a little while, and he was working, I think, for Universal at the time. Mm-hmm. So I would, because I knew Ryan because I knew Fats, and Fats and Ryan are tight. So now I know Ryan. So then, you know, he's kind of like, you know, kind of like a mentor. So I would kind of intern and just kind of like, you know, ride along for a little bit, you know, when he would be doing like, you know, promotions for like the label artists and stuff, and doing like show preparations and stuff like that. And then, you know, he like tossed me a couple jobs on the side. So one job I got to do was like he was, you know, with Universal, which had Bad Boy underneath it, and they had just signed MGK or whatever. So, you know, he was putting out this Lace Up album. Well, Ryan hit me up. It was like, yo, you know, this is what we want to do. We want to get a van. We want to wrap it. And we want to hand out concert tickets in Cincinnati, Chicago, and Cleveland. So, you know, me, Fats, Kells, and a couple other of like the Weon, you know, crew, because we're all like homies and shit. Still homies to this day. We wrapped this van. You know, they sent me a bunch of like art and stuff. So I photoshopped together some artwork for like, you know, the picture of MGK is like his fucking album cover or whatever. I rented a van, we vinyl wrapped it, and we drove it over to Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Chicago. And what would happen is, MGK would call into the radio station and be like, hey, you know, the van's going to be at this particular spot. So, you know, come find the van and get free concert tickets, right?
Right.
So they would be like, go to this place. So we'd pull up, and then they would call in, and then the people would swarm the van, and we would have to, but we only had so many tickets, because like 100 people sometimes would show up. But we had like a cap of like 20, 30 or whatever we were supposed to hand out per location.
My God.
So we did that. And so like Ryan would toss us little jobs here and there. You know what I mean? And then, you know, introduced us to some certain people that, you know. So that was a good networking. But now, yeah, you're right. He's working for 300, right?
Yeah, that's what he does now. I mean, I've never met the guy. That's just saying like, that's like a part of the scene that like.
That's big bro. Like,
I mean, that's the part of the scene that people need to get in tune with is what I'm saying. If you're local, like that's the part, like there's, I think there's like subsections to the scene, kind of like high school cliques essentially. Right.
And oh, very like, much so. Like we all have our homies, like, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of it's like your network is your net worth kind of. And I've been very blessed to just somehow know certain people, you know, especially early on, which kind of opened my eyes, which I think is kind of why I was able to come out swinging when I finally came out as an artist myself.
Right.
I already knew so much because I've done every job. Like right. I've been a jack of all trades pretty much in this music industry. So I'm kind of understand what's kind of going on here.
Yeah. And that's one thing I didn't know when I joined this company, CLM, like the only thing I was before that was an artist and I knew a bunch of people. Like I was really good at networking because I was just a nice dude. You know what I mean? Like if you're just a genuinely good person, not out to fuck people over, you will genuinely have a good name around the scene. You know what I mean? That's just how it works.
Right. You gotta work really fucking hard and be like really valuable because it's like the competition is so crazy. So if you can't provide value to people, they'll just find it elsewhere.
Right.
Plus that's another thing too, is like people forget that there's 10,000 people willing to take your spot the second you slip. So it's just like you gotta work really hard, you know, especially as a producer and you're trying to like be valuable to all these artists or you know, even as an artist yourself, you know, you got to like create content like constantly. You got to make sure that there's something about it that stands out. That's why I did the old man thing or the fat guy thing. Like, it's just like, I wanted to do something weird that like was different, not just me standing in front of a car rapping or whatever.
I mean, these costumes are intricate. They're intricate as fuck.
Yeah, well, it was no joke. It was like hours of prosthetics on both of them. Supposedly, the girl who did the prosthetics in the Sugar Baby video did Brad Pitt's prosthetics in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah, because she went to Roseville schools just like me.
Ah.
Just like, I mean, I didn't know that until like we were working together, because like my video people, like it's a team. You got Alec, who's the DP. He was like the director of photography, right? He's the guy who's pointing the camera, kind of directing the whole thing. Then you got Alex, who's kind of like the guy who does everything. I'm just like, hey man, I want to dress up as an old man. I want to be fucking doing this. I want to do that. You know what I mean? I'm just like, tell him all the shit I want to do.
Yeah.
And he kind of makes it happen. So
I'm like, I'm looking into you're just like, honestly, just scrolling through your information right now. And it's like, yeah, you've done a lot of shit over the years, bro. What's kept you motivated in all these different roles?
I think it's just in me. I think when you're a musician, it's just in you. I think it's just a part of who you are. I'm like such a failure in every other aspect of my life that is just, it's the one thing that I am. I've been a musician since I've been like, as far as I can remember.
Bro, you're a matte blue fucking Tesla. Doesn't show me that you're a failure, bro. Let's just be real here.
I mean, I do okay. I mean, I have a real estate company.
Okay. Oh. You do okay. Andrew, yeah. I'm real with people, okay? You're doing well, bro. Be happy with what you've done. Because, I mean, yeah, like people get envious of like the recording studios you're in. I mean, I'm looking at the shit behind you, bro. Like, I know.
This is my studio. This is mine. This is in my home.
Yeah, bro. Like, what the fuck? You act like you're I'm doing okay.
I'm doing okay. But like, you know, you gotta, you know, stay humble and remember that not all this finance comes from music. You know? Yeah,
no, I feel you on that. And I appreciate you saying that, because a lot of people aren't willing to say, I still have a hustle. Because in the music industry, I'm going to say 90% of people, even the people I work with, have a hustle, bro. Like when I work with Struggle Jennings, I mean, their crew have side hustles when they go home. You know what I mean? Right. Like, their family is like, they don't need side hustles, but they do it to stay humble. You know what I mean? Or a lot of people like do to supplement.
Simple. That's similar to my situation. Like I would say I'm number one lucky, two I work hard, and three I'm talented. So it's just like, it's three, it's like a triple threat. And that's why I'm able to, you know, have what I have, do what I do, and work the way I work. You know, a lot of it's luck, you know, a lot of it's, you know, big brain, a lot of it's just working hard, you know. So I started like a real estate company, so I created like tons of passive income that way. So that's one thing I do. You know, I do okay. I come from like, you know, I don't come from like a poor family or nothing. So, you know, I feel like I had a head start to begin with. That was, you know, I always think about like what would be different if like, you know, but we don't all start from the same place. So I try and stay humble in that fact that, you know, like just because an artist doesn't have like crazy money or whatever doesn't mean that they're not like super like, you know, successful in their own right. You know what I mean? It's hard to get money, you know, as a musician, especially with streaming. And now with the COVID economy, and you can't do fucking shows. Like, where's the money supposed to come from?
Yeah, I was gonna say we could talk about that COVID economy, because fuck this, man.
That's what I want to talk to you about, because I looked into you a little bit when you hit me up, and I was like, okay, I see you doing promoter. I see you were rapping back in the day. So I kind of was just curious, like, what's it like being a promoter in the COVID economy? Is it just non-existent?
It's my fucking first year, first off. Like 2019 was my first year being a promoter. So if you can imagine, in the beginning of 2019, I was an intern. So I quit a corporate job, flipped out of my old music business that I had that ultimately failed. And then I went into, you know, being a promoter, and my buddy Cato, who I've known over the years, was like, all right, man, like you have a good business mindset. Let's try this. I think 38 shows in 1 year. Okay. So I had a good amount that really gets your reps in. And in that time, I turned in from an intern to then, you know, promoter. There's only three of us in the company. So they pretty much was like, he's disposable. And then I turned into an actual promoter. So I feel like I actually, this is my niche, right? I found it. Once I found my niche, COVID. And I was like, oh, cool. Like just started to meet people, just started to really get connected, and then COVID. Right? So yeah, that happened.
I feel similar. And like, you know, it's like right when I dropped Sugar Baby, and that was like my most successful, like biggest record. I was booking headline shows. I was going to headline, you know, a couple shows and stuff. I was super fucking excited. You know, I have like a band. I have a drummer. I have a sound guy. Like I have a band. Like, you know what I mean? I was going to have all the homies open up for me. I'm like, we're going to sell out. It's going to be easy. It's going to be great. right?
Yeah.
Fucking COVID, boom, you know?
Yeah.
So now I'm like, now I got to do it again. But I do have this one song coming out that I really think could be a hit, but it's a totally different like genre. It's more like super pop, but I could let you, you know, hear it on the low. I can't, I don't want to release it yet, but I think I
dude. I'm always down to hear shit.
But yeah, so what, so is that kind of like why you kind of doing the podcast thing? Is that kind of what kind of segued you into that?
Yeah, I've always liked podcasting. I found it in 2014 as like a, just like a thing. You know what I mean? Like I mean, my buddies had a podcast and I listened to it and I loved it because I love audio. I think I really love audio. And I've my biggest thing is leaving a legacy. And I felt like being in a corporate office wasn't going to do that. I felt like being a rapper, I wasn't going to do that. So then I was like, well, I think being a podcaster, sharing my experiences is pretty valuable considering, like you said, I don't have, name one podcast that has conversations like these behind the scene. There are some that has conversations with musical artists, like let's say Joe Rogan, right? But he's not talking about like the actual industry. They usually touch on it and then move forward. My main focus was to talk about the industry as a whole and what you learn and how, you know, kind of like what Gary Vee says, document while you're learning, not document what you want to be. So that's one thing I really found was that, yeah, like once the industry shut down, which I say it shut down, but you know, emailing goes back and forth. Like you email with agents like, hey, what are some hold dates? Oh, okay, let's, because there's a lot. People don't realize like we ask for information for the past 3 years. Like, okay, when you visit this market, what was your turnout for the past 3 years? Like all of that takes time, man. So we're kind of getting the groundwork done. And then once COVID's done, and once they say, you know, entertainment venues can open again, you best expect that we're going to have 15, 20 shows already booked. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what's up. I think that makes a lot of sense because, you know, because my friends got like shows booked, but they just keep getting pushed back.
It's not a bad place to be though, because the contract's already in place. You know what I mean? Then it's like, so once it gets pushed back to a date that works, people will go. Entertainment's going to pop. Promise. Right. Like real estate popped during COVID. You know that?
I mean, it was popping before. I think it actually, you know, it's getting a little weird. Like, you know, I run rentals and I've never had this much trouble finding, you know, a tenant. I think it's just people are hunkering down. They're hurting the money. You know what I mean?
Well, that's different. Yeah, I mean,
the
people are also,
the housing prices are up, and I know a little bit about this. I'm not like an expert by any means, but I believe the reason the housing shot up is a combination of a few factors. One being, limited inventory. There's only so many houses available for sale, right? Another factor is after 2009 or 2008, you know, the Federal Reserve was doing what they call quantitative easing, right? You know about that with the basically subsidized low interest rates.
Yep, yep.
So like you could borrow money cheap. So what that does is that knocks your payments down. So if you have a really low interest rate, you have a lower payment, right? Well, now, you know, in combination with low inventory, houses can get bid up because a house payment can stay, you know, reasonable even at a higher purchase price because the interest rates are so low. So that drives the cost of housing up, or the purchase price up, even though the monthly payment is lower.
That makes sense. I'm making a straight face, but I'm intrigued because I was going to buy a house in the beginning of this and I had an issue with my credit. So like I was one point below to the point where it was like, you know, you either put $1,000 deductible down and that was the plan. And then 1 point drop. And then it was like, now your deductible is 10,000 because there's certain, you know, there's certain programs. But I'm going to get out of
like FHA or something or.
Yeah. 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 Like you, like my credit score was at a point where they have certain programs through that company where it's like, okay, your deductible is 10,000, or if you wait and get your credit score higher, it can be 1,000. And my interest rate was like 2-something%. Like it was stupid low. Like
2.75 on the low end.
Right. And I was like, what the
fuck?
You're
750 or above. Like you can lock in some crazy rates.
My girl was. I'm not.
Yeah.
So it's like one of those things. But like, I know a lot of my friends bought a house and it's like, it's a smart investment during this time. But like you said, like it's a little different on your end because you do rental properties. I didn't think about that actually, to be honest with you. I was just thinking about flipping homes because right now is the best time to sell your home.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. And I thought about liquidating, but at the same time, I don't want to put all my eggs in the fucking US dollar when they're printing up all these goddamn stimulus checks, driving the value of the dollar down. That's Why the fuck would I want to do that?
And no one thinks about
houses
that,
are going to be worth more than those, you know, than the amount of dollars I'll get today, 10 years from now. You know what I mean? It's a better investment just to hold property, in my opinion. I mean, I could end up with egg on my face. I mean, we'll see. Only time will tell. But I mean, it's a pretty tried and true method. It's. I think good business is simple. Like you could explain it to a 10-year-old. and they'll get it. And like, I think a lot of times when people have all these schemes and they're like, well, you know, there's these fucking secret things and it just sounds overly complicated. It's just them trying to bamboozle you most of the time.
Most of the time. Cause like, I mean, like the best shows I've done, cause I've realized like, you know, some, like you said, managers can be funky because they may have more power. They may have more power being an agent. And like you said, agents and managers are different, but sometimes artists put them in both spots, right?
There's overlap. Like,
what'd you say?
There's overlap. You know, they kind of play the same role in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they definitely can. And they, you know, like you said, they do when it comes to like touring managers and stuff like that, especially. Mm-hmm. But like some of these managers we talk to were really weird. And then we talk to the agent and they're super great. And it can be vice versa either way, right? It's like, why do you have an agent if you're also have the same, you know, purchasing power essentially, right? If you have the same exact power. So it's interesting, man, because the point I'm trying to make is the more simple the agent makes it for us and we make it for them, it's like the more successful the show seems to be, which is like, doesn't seem too strange, but like it is, because when you talk about percentages of what you get versus what they get, you know, VIP splits, merch splits, stuff like that. Those are really tough conversations to be in that I'm just learning about now. And that's why I'm saying like COVID for me actually was a blessing, because it put the brakes on, right? So for me, I was like, okay, you're an operations manager now. You got this promotion, but it's like, now you should learn what the promoter does. And the promoter does a lot more, because I just get, my job was, Kevin, here's the show. I'm handing it to you. Execute. That shit's easy. Like, you know how a show works. There's moving parts. You make them happen. You're done. And it makes sure everything runs smoothly.
I give you money. You show up. You know, I get the club, I get the artists, you know, simple.
But the background negotiation behind that shit, when it gets complicated.
It can be like, well, I want this, you know, percent of merch, right? I want this percent of that, you know.
Is it hard or soft merch? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So I'm just saying shit can be different, but like definitely something to learn from. That's why I'm glad COVID kind of put the brakes on, but it also kind of fucked me over in major ways, because I have no money.
Oh man, it's rough. It's rough for artists, you know, and it's rough. I can't imagine promoters probably even harder, because it's like, they literally, they shut down like your job. They basically call it non-essential and just like, well, fuck you essentially. And it's just like, well, what am I supposed to do? Right.
That's when I called Apple back and I said, boys, take me back. And
right. Oh, I need back from the genius bar.
Like, yeah, dude, for real though, dude. And I'm like, well, I got this marketing degree. As I work in the business section of it. So it's, at least I get to use my brain a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I work from home, so we're safe. But that's actually something I want to ask you. So like, obviously being an artist, you can hunker down and make a ton of music. And then COVID, you know, you kind of touched on rentals a little bit. But other than that, man, what do you do every day? I mean, being an introvert, this must be not too bad for you to be locked down.
Well, I have kids as well. So, and I have them about half the week. So I have twin 11-year-old daughters, and they keep me busy. So it's like, I got that, you know, I got the kids and all their homeschooling shit now. So then basically I have to sit and like, you know, be their substitute teacher half the time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How's being a teacher?
It's frustrating. I could, at least I love my kids. I don't know if I could deal with other people's fucking kids.
Oh, fuck that.
Right. You like, shut the fuck up, you little fucker. You know?
Yeah, dude.
No, I love kids, but like, it's tough because it's like, you know, my kid, and it's just like, I really think we're doing the kids a disservice with all this distance learning. I don't think they're learning fucking shit. You know what I mean? They're just setting a whole like generation back, like at least a year.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about that. I mean, yeah, I don't have kids. I don't think about that, but you're seeing this firsthand, right? And you truly believe that.
Well, yeah. Well, especially if you look at the COVID numbers, it's not affecting the kids. You know, it's not fucking the kids up. You know, it's only fucking like old people up, you know?
Yeah, so mostly. Like there are some people, like, you know, off cases where, like, I know a buddy of mine got COVID in Winona, who's like an athlete, and he was in the ICU.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it can happen, right? But I understand what you mean, because like the only thing I'm worried about is, you know, I'll talk about it right now. I've talked about it all the time. And I'm not trying to put you in any position when I talk about this, but it's basic common sense, right? Minnesota became a hotspot based off of ignorance is what I saw. Because, I mean, we've all been running through this together, and I just saw people blatantly not wearing a mask correctly. And they act like it's not a big deal, but that can lead to spreading events. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Fair, though. They did tell us originally not to wear masks.
Bro, don't even say that. They said that for like 2 weeks, and then they fixed it.
It was at least a month. I called
it. I'll give you 4 weeks. And then they fixed it. But yeah, you're right. Like, they didn't know, because in our lifetime, no one's been doing this in 100 years.
Right. And, you know, it, I think there's just a level of distrust that people have that, like, they're not being 100% honest with us.
I get that.
So it's kind of like hard to take everything at face value when you're not, when you're skeptical of, you know, what is true and what's not. Because, but again, it was a novel virus. We didn't know everything about it. So you can expect the information to change. And I don't think that is necessarily in bad faith.
I'll tell you right now, man, I've never paid attention to politics until right now in my life. I never paid attention to politics. I didn't give a fuck. And then now it kind of matters. I mean, in my opinion, it did. Now it doesn't because it's over.
It really affects everybody because it's like, you know, these lockdowns, like, you know, even me and my real estate business, like there's a freeze on evictions right now. So really? I have one tenant. Yeah. That's not paying me anything. And he's been sitting in my house for like 6 months now.
Just straight squatting.
I mean, essentially. I mean, we've talked and we're trying to work something out, but, you know, and when COVID first happened, I gave all my tenants free rent for a whole month. Like, right.
Did you really?
Yeah. I hit them all up. I was just like, yo, we're locking down. You know, obviously you can't go to work. You know, shit's going to get fucked up. Just don't worry about, I think I called them in March and I gave them April free is what I remember. But then I had one tenant who's like, but it's like, I mean, to be fair, I was like, we're struggling. They're shutting everything down. It's like all their jobs. It's like, what's the guy supposed to do? But it's kind of sucks that then they just put the burden upon me. You know, it's like, so it's just like,
yeah, well, there's no clear answer, I guess. You're right. Yeah. There's no like clear answer for anybody. It's just kind of like, we're going to do this, figure it out. And I think artists, if they're smart, would take the PPP loan. But I feel like it depends on your stature because I know some artists, I talked to a financial advisor. He does it for a pretty big artist in Minnesota. I can't name it for confidentiality, but pretty much the guy is a record deal, right? And he didn't want to do the PPP loan because it could be like bad publicity. And I wanted to ask you about that. Like, not being a small business then, like, I mean, would you consider it if you're not bringing in any revenue as an artist? Because artists are businesses.
To be honest, I've never even considered it. Just because, I don't know. I don't need it. And I don't love the idea of just taking, you know, government handouts, especially when I feel like they're printing money that doesn't exist. Just lowering the value of everyone's money. So everyone's savings account is just going to go down, essentially. Even though it'll say the same amount, the value of each dollar in that account will go down.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of like the philosophy is like, well, if everyone's got a gun, I want one too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's a tricky one. I don't know. I don't want to be like, you know, like moral about it. But at the same time, it's just, I never really thought about it. I don't know how much I like really qualify. I could have, I guess, maybe.
But I was just thinking like,
I don't know if those are dried up now. I thought those were all like,
yeah, they're done now. But I was just curious, like in the beginning of when they first came out, I think a lot of artists were doing it because they needed that dollar. The people who do lean on music, and then some people took advantage of the system. You know what I mean? There's that.
The people, because they wrote the bill in like a fucking day, so they left like all types of room for people to do like fuck shit.
Yeah, no,
but I mean, you know, the unemployment's been really helping people. You know, because it's like if you're gonna tell people like you can't work, I mean, you better give them something. Because it's like you're the one shutting the door on them. It's not like they made a bad decision and it's their fault. No, it's fucking your fault for shutting us down. So it's like at least you could do is help out.
So, yeah. And luckily, like, you know, I don't have to worry about it. And a lot of my friends do. A lot of my friends filed for unemployment. My mother filed for unemployment. You know what I mean? So like, I get it.
Artists can even get it though. Like when you were like, if you're performing a lot, you know, as an artist, you know, you can talk about all the revenue that you know, were making in the shows and like use that as a thing for unemployment as well.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to talk about streaming dollars like you said earlier.
Man, I got like, I don't remember. I don't know what Sugar Baby's at now. I think it's at like, I don't know. I can check.
I don't know. I think it was like, I don't know. It was some obscene number.
On Spotify or whatever.
Let's check. Let's double check here. I know that on YouTube, you better be monetizing on YouTube, fam.
A lot of that came from advertising, though.
Well, I mean, right.
Let's see. Let's just pull myself. How do I have Limp Bizkit pulled up?
Oh, I don't know Spotify anymore, dog. I went to Apple Music.
Oh, really?
Oh, fuck yeah. When I was an artist, when I stopped being an artist, man, I work for Apple. I get it for free. So I'm like going to, you know, do that. But Spotify, yeah. I kind of use this as a reference.
So if you can, I don't know if you can see, but it's at
your camera's flame. So put it up to the screen. Let's see if we can see it here.
So it's not going to be in focus. It doesn't have any autofocus because it's like a cinema. It's like literally a cinema camera that I use that I repurpose as like a webcam.
That's sick.
because I'd be shooting people's music videos. Like I shot like that video with Nego Slim. I got one coming out with Lizzie Harper. I shot that one for, you know, Toxic.
Yep.
I shot that one, Lose It All, for Toxic.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Toxic, he's like a new artist, but he was like part of Blue Felix, that band. I don't know if you know, but they're like a metal band.
Okay, I was like, I was in metal for a while, but I was like, I wasn't like that. Our band was called Sinfulangelo. I've never came across Blue Felix.
I'm surprised because they actually have a relatively good following. They have
This was 8 years ago.
Oh, these guys are old. They've been doing it for like 10, 15 years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they have like an aging fan base. So, you know, like since you're a younger guy, you might have, like, you know what I mean? It might just be generational. Like they were the generation before you.
I mean, I'm 10 years under you. Right? You said you're 34?
Yeah, I know. Now I'm the old guy. I used to be the little guy. I'm still coming to terms with being the old guy. Like I'm still used to being like the little homie. Like, cause when I was with Fats, I was like the little guy.
Technically, in the industry, you still are, bro. I mean, the people I work with are, you'd be surprised that the age. Like, I've never came across someone.
Oh, I don't think I would be. I've been around. I've seen like a lot of the people that like really pulls the strings are like 50 something.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like the people I meet, they're like, "How old are you?" I'm like, at the time, I was 23, and they're like, "What? I'm working with a 23-year-old promoter?" And I was like, "Yes, you are."
Like, well, I don't trust you now.
Yeah, dude. No, they were skeptical for sure, but it's fun to deal with that though, man.
I don't trust young people because they don't got a lot to lose. It's like when you get older, you have shit to lose. When you're younger, you're just like, fuck it. I'm just running it.
That's pretty much what happened to me, man. I just say fuck it every show. You gonna take the vaccine, bro? It's coming out. I'm not doing it.
I'm on the fence. Like, I feel like, you know, when I look at the COVID numbers, like people in my age group, 30 to 35, right? In Minnesota, at least, there's been 25,000, maybe more now. I check it often because, like,
I do too. I check it every day. There's a daily report.
Yep, exactly. So I think there's been like 25,000, 26,000 in my age group confirmed cases. And out of those cases, 9 deaths. So I'm kind of like, yeah, we're at 26,752 cases between 30 and 34 years old, 9 deaths. So when I Googled it last time, it was a 0.03 because I did the math, you know, death rate. So I'm like 0.03, like, you know, that's not terrible.
Let me see. Were you looking at the MDH?
Yeah, this joint right here.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking at right now because my age group is 2 deaths. Yeah.
2 out of 34,000.
34,000, but like 2 deaths. If there is zero,
it kind of makes you be like, well, why the fuck are we shutting down then? If it's like, I mean, when you start to go up the ladder, it starts to look a little worse. But feel like the people who are at risk, you know, can maybe, you know, lock down and then let the rest of us kind of like.
But because those are the people that don't care that much, man. Those are the people. That's the main point is, let's say I go out to a show. I then go back and visit my grandfather because he lives right by a venue. And then I go give it to him and then he dies. That is what they're worried about. And I think, but I see the point you're making too. Like,
don't you think like your grandpa, like, you ain't coming here. I see you going to shows and shit. I see you on Facebook. What the fuck? You ain't coming here. Like my mom didn't come over on Thanksgiving. We Zoomed.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's a difference.
She's old and she's at risk, so she is aware. She's aware of her own risk factors.
I think people are getting a little cocky, too, though, because Minnesota gave out free testing. Ever since then, people are getting a little cocky with it.
I think the testing's cool. Like, I think it's good, you know, since there's such a high... But, I mean, you know, I don't want to go too far into the COVID thing, but I do think false positives are a thing as well.
Yeah.
You know, and that could play into, like, well, like, this many people are asymptomatic. Well, maybe, or maybe it's a false positive. Yeah. Right, maybe they don't even fucking have it. So, that could lead to these. You know, maybe it's not as, you know, like, you know, I mean, maybe those numbers are lower because it's a confirmed test. You know, mm-hmm. And I could be overstating. I mean, I would have to do a little bit of Googling to know exactly what they think the false positivity rate is. So that could be a little like conspiracy theory ish.
Yeah, I see that. All right. Well, let's get off the COVID topic then. What do you think of promoters?
I don't want to make, you know, people mad because, you know, people like, you know, really, they feel really strongly one way or the other.
Bro,
I'm kind of in the middle.
I love debating it. I love debating it because I'm one way. And like, I'm more than happy to, if someone proves me wrong, if someone can prove me wrong or at least be like, Kevin, like, you're wrong and this is why. 100%. Right. But the only people that are saying, Kevin, you're wrong are the ones that are just mad. And I'm just like, cool.
But at the time, as a musician, you know, like, who gives a fuck what I think? You know, like,
yeah, yeah.
What weight does my opinion even have? I'm not in any position to make any sort of decisions here. Yeah, so either. It's like I'm just yelling into the wind anyway. And, you know, and then I'm pissing people off, losing fans in the process. So yeah. It's just like, what's the point?
That's true.
Yeah. So,
well, Andrew, what do you think of promoters?
Like I said earlier, I think they're a symbiotic relationship. You know, like an artist can't do everything. So I do think managers and promoters and this and that are all necessary. I think labels are necessary. I don't believe that labels get a fair rep because they're like, we just use you. It's like, bitch, they invested all this money into like a fucking long shot. You know, like how much money did you get in your deal? $1 million. Okay. Well, you know, that's $1 million. They just, when you invest in music, you're just like lighting shit on fire unless it pops off, because it's not like it's like, you know, when you buy a property, it's actual equity. When you have music, it's like it either makes it or it doesn't.
Right.
But promoters, I think same thing. I think, you know, they're necessary. Like someone's got to make the shows. The artists are making money doing shows. But again, anytime there's any sort of, there's always room for fuckery in every aspect. Artists do fuckery, you know, like you'll, let's say, pay an artist for a verse and they'll give you like a trash ass verse, or they won't even give it to you at all, or the recording will be fucked up, or you get a beat from a producer and they won't give you the stems for the mix. Or, you know, I think producers are, promoters are important. I mean, someone's got to promote the show. Someone's got to make this shit happen. You know, an artist has to be an artist. You know, I think that's why managers are also good too. You know, they can open doors and they can handle shit. Just like, you know, you focus on you and making the music and whatever, and I'll help you open some doors. But the problem is like, just like in every industry, I have a philosophy where I think in every industry, 70% of the people in it are incompetent. No matter the industry.
It's like 80%, bro. It's the 80-20 rule. Yeah.
Well, especially in music, though, because we're all a bunch of fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like that's kind of what I tell people. Like, my job isn't rocket science. And a lot of what you'll realize is like the people who, some managers that I've met that are like from big, big name artists that I'm not going to name, but like fucking, you know, big artists. They're not the smartest individuals. No. They're just like, I've got my reps in. Like I was speaking with Mod's tour manager, and shout out to Mod's son. Love that motherfucker, dude. Very good dude. He's taught me a lot, and his tour manager sat down with me on his tour. I was on tour with him. And
how you got to know Charisma too? Cause I remember Charisma did that tour with him.
Yeah. Well, I was before that. I was actually supposed to drum on that tour. Okay. And then, you know,
popped in my head.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, and he went on in like a different route with it. But yeah, no, I mean that's how, you know, me, Charisma, and Mod all kind of like knew of each other, right? But Mod, his tour manager this past March, was like, yo, man, like I just put my reps in. And he's like also a tour manager for like Scary Kids. And I realized too, like tour managers are someone you hire per tour. I didn't realize like they kind of just come in and out. I didn't know that. I was like, I thought you had a set tour manager. Well, some people have a preference, but most of the time it's like just kind of in and out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're just OGs most of the time.
Yeah.
Right? They're just guys who've been around a long time who know how to, like, how the shit works.
Or, like, one young buck.
Sometimes, yeah, it can be. But what's nice, though, is, like, those are the people that really, you know, like, make sure that the money's secured. You know, like, if the promoter's on funny games, like, we had a couple situations like that. And, you know, our tour manager straightened them out. So, I mean, I think, you know, every person that's in the game has that role for a reason, but at the same time, there's always room for bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't matter what your role is. But the problem is when you're a manager or a promoter, I think the promoters get a worse rep because they interact directly with the money. Yep. The money's like directly with them.
Yep.
Right. And I think same with labels and managers. And I think that's why, because they have like some level of like control, you know. And then, so when they're on bullshit, it's worse than like, let's say when an artist is on bullshit, because the artist is kind of subject to everything.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good way to put it. I think you put it in a very good way that I've never thought of. Like, yeah, it's the relationship of what people think. And it's like, yeah, we touch money. That's what we do from the beginning to end.
So like we're immediately skeptical of you.
But it's like, it's like one thing I make very clear to people is that like, it's not like I make all the money either. You know what I mean?
Clarity. You just got to be clear. It's like, well, this much went to here, this much went to here, this much went to here. This is how much.
Oh, I document everything, man. Like I got my own fanny pack and I fucking document everything.
You gotta. And that's, I think, the cure to that, you know, because transparency is the most important. As long as everyone's happy, because like, you know, the promoter needs to make money, the venue needs to make money, the artist needs to make money, the managers need to make money. You know, everyone's, you know, it's a job for everyone working in it. So it's not like no one should make money. I just think sometimes And then also inexperienced business people, sometimes they don't know enough. So they're unreasonably skeptical sometimes.
And I feel like artists can be those inexperienced business people because they also have to make money, but they don't make money the same way we all do, right? Like there's two sides of a show, right? There's like the local artists and then there's the everyone else pretty much is what I call it. Everyone else is usually working together saying, okay, this is how we're all going to make money. But those artists are alone. They have their own little, their own individual businesses, right? If you think about it. And so when I was an artist, I remember I had to sell my merchandise. I had to sell all my tickets. And then on top of that, I had to like do all these extra steps that maybe the other promoter or whoever didn't have to do. But like, it just depends on what role you're playing, right? Like I always tell my artist boat is like, bro, you got to bring merch. There's no exception. You got to bring certain things because you're not getting paid to perform yet. So when you get paid to perform, that'll be a different conversation. But until then, you know, I've had a lot, there's an argument that someone threw to me a while ago that they were like, why don't you pay the local acts? I said, that's not the business model we're having, but that is a business model that you can go with. But then you just got to figure out where the revenue is coming in.
Well, it depends on how much leverage that local artist has. It's like, well, if you want me to pay you, then I'm just not going to put you on the show at all. And I mean,
that depends too. It's like, well, maybe if you want to hop on for free, then maybe you'll do some extra promotion of your own dollars to get your own fan base that I know you have.
It does get tricky when it comes to pre-sale. I think sometimes that can get a little fishy. I know, like, I've heard both sides of the argument on the presale, but part of me, I don't know where I fall. I think it's, if you're like a no-name artist, I mean, you got to take whatever opportunity you can. And you shouldn't take a presale opportunity if you can't do the presale. Like, if you can't actually sell the tickets, because then you're just paying the promoter. So then it's coming out your pocket, and then the club is not going to have the people in it that, you know, supposedly bought the tickets. So then it's going to be an emptier venue. Plus, you're getting put on earlier, so no one's even fucking there yet. You know what I mean? So so you're basically just taking an L.
I laughed, by the way, because the context, because at the top of our contract, it says, if you cannot take this opportunity, do not take it. Like, basically pretty much saying, if you cannot afford it, if you cannot afford investing in yourself right now, do not do it.
But I don't think even it's like the money thing. I think it's like, you know, the buying the tickets, you know, I think you got to be able to sell them. But at the same time, your name on the flyer should be able to sell them.
Right. That's the argument.
Yeah.
That's the fucking problem.
But again, that just comes back to like, what is your bargaining power? Like how, like, you know what I mean? Like how confident are you that I can bring people to the
door? Now you're going into actual like industry, like business, bro. Like that mind, like you may be a dropout, but bro, that's real shit. Like a SWOT analysis, for example, what's your strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? That's what you start with in marketing, right? So you're saying like, what's your buying power? What are your strengths? Well, what are your threats if you do that? What are your opportunities if you do that? What are your weaknesses? So if you have to weigh those out before every single opportunity, and I think a lot of people, like you said, it ties back into not a lot of people are that smart in the music industry either. And I'm just being frank about it, right?
There's different forms of smartness.
I get that, man. I'm not trying to be a douche, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it's just like business smarts. Let's do that. Business smarts. There's not a lot of business smarts. People don't think, when they think music, if you're a true artist, there's a reason why they hire a booking agent, because they don't want to deal with the business side of it. That's the truth, bro. I've had a lot of artists ask me that. People like YouTube rappers, for example, they're like, man, I'm a content creator. I don't want to deal with this. I had a YouTube rapper ask me, man, like, can you be my liaison? Can you be my agent to just handle the negotiations? Because he hated it that much, even though his inbox was flooding. You know what I mean?
Well, that makes you hate it more because it's overwhelming at times. And as a content creator, and especially in like the TikTok generation, like, you know, the demand for content is so high, and you have to do stuff to stand out because everything is so flooded.
And you got so like 3 seconds to capture their attention, man.
And not only that, but like, yeah, and you got to do it consistently. So like, you got to constantly make something that people find interesting, that makes you different than the other people. And it's not like back in the day, like where, you know, you could drop an album every like 2-3 years. Like now you got to go boom, 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 boom. You know, and you got to get like your social medias up and like all that stuff to try and like funnel people over to you and just raise awareness. And that can be really hard. I see a lot of people working really hard and not getting a lot of results, but I think sometimes people just run in place as well. But I agree with that. Like it can be very frustrating to try and handle everything yourself. And that's why you do have promoters. But I do think like if you're going to jump on a presale, just, you know, if you're like, I can do 20 tickets, right? I'll do 20 tickets, like boom, boom. So and then you get all your homies to get the tickets, right? you know?
And like, yeah, I mean, like some people don't have the humility to do it. I mean, I did. I had my grandma buy tickets, you know, type shit. Even though she wasn't going, my grandma would invest in me. You know what I mean?
Right. But it's like, you got to show up though, because I want you on the floor.
I get like, that
I want
too.
I want the promoter to see that because I don't want to be doing presale forever. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get my name up. So if I do presale and I'm like 20 tickets and then it's my time to go on, I go on first, right? Because I'm a fucking nobody, right? There's still those 20 people I brought. You know what I mean? And the promoter looks at it like, oh, okay. Right? As opposed to, oh, he just gave me, was that 20 tickets? Was that $10 a pop, like $200, right?
Right.
So, because then it's like, I mean, the promoter is going to be like, whatever, I got my $200. That's all I really cared about in the first place. But I do think like building your fan base is really important. And if you really want, like, you just throw your own fucking show, you know?
Yeah, if you really want a DIY, yeah. Like you said, you're a DIY type person. You throw your own shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you throw your own show. And then
you don't use people like me.
Well, people like you provide bigger opportunities than someone like doing it themselves can probably get themselves, at least starting out. If you know, when you have a name, then all of a sudden, like, you know, doors open. But like, it's kind of the chicken before the egg. It's kind of like, well, how do you get the name? You know, like, and that's why it is just hard fucking work. You know, be different, have something special about you. Like, I think what makes me special is that I can like slay a piano and I can write songs and like, you know, I make pop records mainly. So I'm not even like really in the hip hop sphere totally. I mean, I fuck with the hip hop scene heavy. Like all my homies are rappers, but my music specifically is like in its own kind of lane, which is also kind of a curse because it's, you know, it's harder to jump on certain shows and get on certain DJs, you know, because DJs, they just, you know, play whatever, you know, they're like, I'm doing hip hop, whatever, boom. So I just play this. So it's kind of like, you know, but then again, it's what keeps me different. Like, I don't think other people do the music that I do. So it's like, I have that kind of lane to myself in that way. So
yeah, let's talk about that. What's next, man? What's next for Andrew Thomas since you're talking about music?
You know, I'm working on an album right now. Mm-hmm. It's very like pop. Very pop. I'm going all the way. I want a fucking Grammy. I want to hit so fucking bad. I got this really cool like song. I'll just send it to you on the private, on the DM, that I have a lot of confidence in. So I'm working on that. I got some singles. I think it's going to be like late January to mid February is when I'm going to drop like a single, I think. I'm going to let, because I know like during the holiday season, I don't want to compete with all the shit that's going on, especially with the inauguration, with Christmas, with all that shit. Plus all the labels, they basically just go on vacation for like 2 months. So it's just like not really great timing.
Not at all, man. This is the worst time to drop music.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a good time to drop shitty music. I think it's fine.
Like content in general, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just like mixtape type shit. Just like, fucking here you go. So I've been like, I don't know. I've made a couple like kind of like just songs that I thought about maybe just dropping for filler just to try and get like my numbers up a little bit before I actually drop. But at the same time, I don't want to drop anything that's like not fire because then it kind of like, you're only as good as your last release.
Right.
So, I'm just working on trying to create content, trying to get my social media numbers up a little bit. Just cause like, I don't know, I used to get like way more interaction than I do now. But they keep changing their algorithm every time they introduce something new. So now the new thing is like the TikTok and the reels.
Yeah, I stopped giving a fuck, bro. You saw my followers. Like, I have good credibility in like music, but if you look at my page, it's not.
People page a little bit.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, 50 likes type shit. Like,
I mean, mine, I used to get like 1,000 per post, and now I'm like maybe 200 if I'm lucky. So it's like they keep knocking it down. But I think it's because what Instagram is doing though is they're stretching their platform so thin. I think because it's like you got the fucking pictures and you got the stories. Then you got the IGTV. Now you got the reels. Mm-hmm. Now, you know what I mean? It's just like
focus. You know,
yeah. And it's kind of, it feels like they pick favorites. It's like, well, now we're doing the reels. So now, like, you know, I put a little video up of me playing like the Dr. Dre, you know, dling, 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 on the piano or whatever. 10,000 views first day.
Boom. I saw that. That came across my shit the other day.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what?
That's, you're like bullshit. I knew that was a test, man. I was like, why is he doing that? I've seen that 100 times. Then I watched it and I was like, wait, it's because what I just did. I watched it all the way through.
Yeah, yeah. But it got like hella views and shit. So I'm like, oh, okay. So, and then since I've only done like 2 reels so far, but like I've seen my numbers like, you know, all of a sudden follow on my shit. So I'm like, okay. So I'm just like playing in. So I'm basically piggybacking off the millions of dollars that Instagram is spending trying to get this new platform.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they're pushing it. So I'm just riding that wave, essentially.
I mean, go on TikTok, bro. That's actually a good way to get an organic following, funny enough. I've kind of fucked around on TikTok. And when I got like, you know, one video did decently well, like Plaza just experienced that, right? Plaza just went viral over the weekend. And I was just like,
yeah, just mix that song for him.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's that song, bro. Man, one quick thing, man. I've been a big fan of that man for a while. Like at his shows, I'll be the one right up front. I'm like, bro, that dude's just straight up talented. There's nothing you can say about it. My buddy Nate Millions as well kind of reminded me of that same vibe when he was rapping.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, it's crazy. No one can take the lyricism away from those two people. Those two people, I will say, like can go toe to toe with some of the best rappers, in my opinion.
Well, that's what I think as well. I think as far as artists that I've known, I would say Jay Plaz is probably the number one most talented that I've met personally. Not only that, but like, yeah, he sounds like, you know, he should already be like platinum. Like he's just that good. And it's basically an honor and a privilege to be able to work with him just because he's so, you know, he's so amazingly talented and he's been a great, you know, support and partner with me. So that dude for sure. I think he's going to go. I think he's going to make it. I really do. I believe in him.
Yeah, people have been saying that for a minute. Who else do you think, man? I'm just curious because for me, I thought the same thing about Nate. When Nate had his own thing going on, I was like, bro, you fucking crazy.
Still, I mean,
a lot of people.
You know, what was that? Cashy? He's pretty good too.
Cashy's crazy, man. That dude has a mind. Okay, the creativity in him is fucking crazy, man. He doesn't pin himself to one wall. Cashy's super good. He's not even from here. Like, we know of him.
Fargo, right? He's like Fargo.
Yeah, man. He's from Fargo.
But we're very closely tied to Fargo. Like, our scene and Fargo scene, like, pay very, you know what I mean?
Fargo's way dedicated, though. I will say that right now. Me and my artist did a show in Fargo, and that show was fucking lit compared to some Minnesota shows.
I'd love to do a show in Fargo. I feel like it would be lit because, like, all the, like, I know a bunch of people from there because, like, they just kind of are part of our scene as well. Like, you got Zach Lucci and stuff. You got, you know, our, what is that, DJ? Nation or whatever, but
there's a lot of DJs have, like,
they have like their EDM thing and they're just running shows and stuff.
Yep.
And, like you said, Cashy's out there and there's a few others, so I'd love to go out there. Will Robinson, he's another really amazingly talented artist. There's a bunch. I don't really want to sit and, like, you know, name drop and feel like I leave someone out and they're like, well, the fuck?
Oh, no, absolutely. No, I was just curious. I mean, like, I have my same three, but mine aren't recent. That's why I even beginning asked, like, you know, like who do you look at? Because for me, a lot of my artists I look at now are even recent. Like Nate was my number one for a while. And then Bodiz is my new guy. I've known Bodiz for a long time. Not a lot of people know him. He's doing a good job doing like good shit with Google Ads. He's really the DIY kind of guy. He's making his own beats now, doing his own engineering, and that's what he's taking COVID to do. And bro, when you drop like 10 singles, you drop a mixtape, and then you drop about 5-6 remixes, and then, like, you know, they're doing decent in numbers. And compared to a lot of local acts, I will say that I'm going to give him a solid shout out on this podcast because he's obviously my artist too. But when I see someone actually being like, Kevin, do you know about Google Ads? I'm like, fuck, good for you, because not a lot of people do.
Right. Well, Google Ads is a great tool. I mean, advertising, because it's like you want to expand your reach. You know, like, you can't expect Minnesota to just fucking put you on like that. Like, some small brain type shit. It's just like, I don't understand. Like, you got to get your reach out. If you don't have reach, I mean, it's just going to be the same 300, 400, 500 people watching your shit over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, marketing and advertising in general, because marketing isn't advertising, the two different things, but you know, they coincide. And what I'm saying by that is that when you're willing to advertise and take the time to learn that as an artist, that's when I'll start taking you seriously. Because that's when, like, you know, you could be as talented as ever, but you may never, ever do a lick of advertising or marketing. And you could get lucky and pop off, but
you can. If you're amazing enough and people see you and they're like, holy fuck, and they just share the fuck out of it.
That's the shock factor, man. Yeah.
It can still, like, you know, it can still go, but it is an uphill battle. And I think, you know, and all the more reason to advertise, because then you get even more people to say, holy fuck, and share it.
Right,
you
right.
Know? Like, rather than like the 10 people and hope that pops off. I mean, you can go viral. Like, I've had a viral post before that was just like organic as fuck, but, you know, you can't count on it.
No, not at all.
But you just, I think, you know, now you definitely want to impress people. You want to, like, bring your A game, especially with like the TikTok stuff. You want to, like, if you watch TikTok, right, you scroll through it. Anytime there's a musician, they're always doing like something fucking incredible, right? It's always like, look how good I am at finger drumming or whatever. And they're like, yeah. You know, it's fucking insane. Right? Or they'll have like some production or be like three dudes dancing good as fuck. So it's like, it's all stuff that you have to make people say, wow. So then they share it. Cause if it's like, oh, that's cool. And then you just swipe, it's just not really going to go nowhere. So
you ever been on a podcast before, bro?
No, this is my first one, I think.
First off, good to have you, bro. It's been, you're very good for a podcast. And I think a lot of people need to recognize that for one, cause artists are getting on podcasts now and that's some good shit. But then for two, dude, definitely start your own. Fuck it. Start your own podcast.
I've definitely thought about it. I like to rant, so it could happen.
Hey, you're good to have on, bro. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I'm gonna cut this. Everyone got shit to do, but really, right. Really, first off, do appreciate it. Send me that song. I'm gonna drop my email in this chat real quick. Let me see.
Okay, I was just gonna send you a Google Drive link to the to the IG or whatever in the DM.
I'm not gonna be that guy. I'm not gonna share it. Don't worry about it.
No, right. It's basically, and I've gotten really good feedback on it, so I'm very excited to. I want to drop it now, but it's just like timing, you know. And I want to get another fire video, so I'm plotting all that out now, because I have really cool video ideas, but I can't spoil any of them, obviously. Because
anytime after January, bro, do it, drop it.
Yeah, it's coming probably February, you know, which kind of sucks because it's been like that's like a whole year since I dropped Sugar Baby. Right, because I think I dropped Sugar Baby last February, but you know, COVID, fucking COVID. But plus, I've dropped a lot of records with my other artists, like producing.
Right, not like you're just sitting there. You know what I mean?
No, I'm like busy as shit. Everyone's like, "Bro, you're fucking so busy." I'm like, "I know, it's ridiculous." Like, I literally got back from like I had to go to like a appliance warehouse get a new fridge for one of my units. Like, I had to like rush home to do this podcast. So.
Well, much love for making time to do it, man. I greatly appreciate it. I'm a low podcast for now. We'll see what happens.
Hey, man. You know, just start somewhere. But hell yeah. Thanks for having me. I really
appreciate it. Absolutely, man. I much love for being on. You have a good night, brother.
Oh, one question before I go.
Oh, sure.
Where can I find this podcast?
Oh, yeah, everywhere. You can find Kev's Perspective on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Just look up Kev's Perspective, K-E-V, comma, S, and then Perspective. You'll find that everywhere. I'm usually pretty good with my SEO. I'm usually pretty good with it. You can even look up Kevlo, K-E-V-L-O-E. You'll find it everywhere. It's usually a pretty unique thing. But yeah, man, find it there. And then I'm probably going to release this, let's say, I think it's about 2 weeks from now. So two weeks from now is when it'll be all good to go. And I'll have little mini clips. We'll have some good full episodes. It'll be good. Look it up.
Dope, dope. And I'll definitely share it.
Much love, brother. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for all the love you've been showing to Kev's Perspective. I hope you guys pick up the gems that are being dropped in these conversations. Please go subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Kev's Perspective. Again, don't forget that comma. Go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review on the very bottom. I'd love to hear your feedback. And for any kind of guests you want to hear on the podcast, go follow me on Instagram. It's at Kev's Perspective Podcast. Again, it's at Kev's Perspective Podcast. Thank you for listening and keep supporting. Cheers.